over a number of weeks, I've tended to be trying to do something with fairly large sections of different parts of the Old Testament, and more recently in Leviticus. But this evening I just want to concentrate on this one chapter, which deals with what has become known as the Day of Atonement. It seems to me, as I read this passage, that there is something of a very different tone about God's direction for this day. There is a great deal of concern over holiness and purity thus far. The whole question of who it is who can approach God and in what conditions. The early part of the Leviticus was looking at sacrifice and the need of sacrifice to cleanse and to atone, to build the relationship between man and God. For sacrifice to be possible, priests were necessary, consecrated as mediators between the rest of the nation, the people of God, and God himself. And more recently, we were able to take a glimpse at the more general aspects of holy living. The need for life itself to be a preparation for worship and dealing with God. That's maybe something that we need to think about. That, I confess it often crossed my mind when I would hear of the traditional preparation services for communion in the tradition of the Free Church. Whereas I think Scripture, by and large, is very concerned that life itself should be our preparation, that in some ways a special preparation is not really the biblical picture. But that, by the by, holy lives were also an essential, even in the things that they ate, the things that they touched, and so on. But here we come to a very special aspect of Israel's religious life, the Day of Atonement, what I've called the Great Atoning. Atonement is mentioned in a number of other places, even back as far as the first chapter of Leviticus, talking about the more general sacrifice of burnt offerings. And there it says, it will be accepted on his behalf as his atonement. But here is the Great Atoning. It's a word that is mentioned a number of times in this chapter as well. But let's take it, I'll try and take it just quickly as the chapter unfolds. I think first of all we do need to just note that first reference to the death of the two sons of Aaron, the reason for it being their offering of unsuitable fire, profane fire, before the Lord. There was a breakdown of this standard of holiness that was required for approaching God. And all the more reason then that the Lord is going on to reinforce the need for holiness in approaching him. But in the particular characteristic of this day is that the priest was to go that much further in approaching God. It's really quite contemporary language almost. In verse 2, the Lord said to Moses, "Tell Aaron, your brother, not to come at simply any time into the holy place inside the veil." If just go back a moment, if you were to remember the design of the tabernacle, the tent itself, there was the massive courtyard around it. But as you come to the tent itself, it was a rectangular shape, and there were two rooms in it. You would enter through the end of one of them, which itself was a rectangle, and at the back of it, the only entry, there was another veil inside there into a smaller room at the end. It was the only way into it, and it was at that second room is the holy place inside the veil. In some places it's called the holiest, some places the most holy. In the old authorized version, I think it used to be called the Holy of Holies. The most holy place. There was the Ark, the mercy seat, the place that God says, even in this chapter, he reminds them again, it's there on that mercy seat that the cloud was to settle, which was to indicate that was where God chose to dwell amongst his people. As was suitable to express it that way, to demonstrate it that way in the Old Testament days. But this is the point about this place and about this whole Day of Atonement. It centers around the holy place. Or if you read on, it's actually bursting forth from that holy place. That is where it has to come from. But it's a very exclusive place, a restricted entry. That's what it's like, a massive, great, restricted entry sign. Only one person can go in, and he can only go in one day per year. He goes in there to the mercy seat, and if he doesn't go on the terms that God is setting out in this chapter, he will die. I think it's worth your while noticing here too. This is talking about God's place of mercy, where he spreads out his mercy. He gives it out. But he says, if you don't come in the right way, it's not mercy you receive, but your due reward of death. It's unauthorized, it's unsanctified entry or approach to God. You don't receive the mercy, you don't receive the forgiveness, you receive death instead. And for several places in this chapter, those two ideas are put side by side. If you approach that mercy seat in the wrong way, lest you die. Entry was to be as directed. Do you recall at the end of the chapter it said they did as God commanded Moses? Do you remember as we've gone through Exodus, through Leviticus, how often that came up? As God directed. Do it as God directs. All will be well. So it's this holy place which is the focus of these events. There are offerings to be associated with it. And I would suggest that the form of this chapter is really working in cycles. It works through verses 1 to 5 in something of a cycle, and then from verse 6 to 10, much the same events, but being retold in a slightly different way. Then verse 11 onwards, a similar repeat, a similar cycle, until you get down towards the cleansing, the cleansing afterwards, after all has been dealt with, from verse 23 onwards. So let's just bear that in mind as we go. We don't just see one thing and that's the only place it's mentioned. It is there's repeated mentions of these things through different parts of the chapter. But offerings are essential. They appear, first of all, for Aaron himself, the high priest, who was to go there on behalf of the people. He had to be purified first. There was a sin offering and a burnt offering. He had to go in, washed, cleansed in the holy garments, all that was consecrated for this work. And he was to do this in order to make atonement. Here we come back, I'm bringing you back to the beginning of the second cycle where this is mentioned again. He has the bull from verse 3, verse 6. He makes atonement for himself and for his house. He cannot stand on behalf of the people except having made atonement for himself. And here I want to just spend a moment talking about this word, atonement. If you were to go down the street and do a survey of how many people knew what it meant, I don't think you would get many answers. It is a biblical word. and there are people who've written great books on it. I can't do that tonight. But just to glimpse and try and get the basics of it, what it's about man coming to his God. How does he do that? He comes through a reconciliation is necessary. This right relationship it needs to be re-established between God and man. That's to be by forgiveness. And that forgiveness is to be by the shedding of blood. Atonement is about being made right with God. And that is only through forgiveness. By the payment of the penalty. The sinner is liable to a penalty. And that payment is not just being waived, it is being placed on a substitute, as we've noticed already, with the sin offerings. There is a penalty. Blood must be shed. Without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sins. Without remission of sins, there is no atonement. There is no coming together with God. Although, having said that, we also discover later on in the chapter that there is another goat. We'll come back to the two goats in a moment, but there is another goat that is not killed. His blood is not shed. And it tells us that he too, that second goat, is also to be an atonement. It is still part of the removal of sin from a man's life, that he might be brought right with God. As I say, that is only the very basics. It's only a very quick sketch of what atonement is, that the area that atonement is dealing with. Maybe on another occasion we can spend more time on that theme. And that's why the offerings are necessary. A sin offering, it's repeated, it's mentioned on a number of occasions, for Aaron first, and for his household, also for the people of Israel. The blood had to be poured out. There is a bit of a misprint in the outline that you've been given. And incense is mentioned there. I'm not sure why it appeared before the sin offerings. I didn't intend to mention it there. It was to be a bit later on. But the sin offerings are the first thing that must be dealt with, that man should be right with God. When the third cycle, as I would call it, is dealt with from verse 11 onwards, it's there that the incense is also to be brought. And it's to be brought as the priest goes in for the first time with the blood to the mercy seat. The blood was not just to be poured out in the courtyard of the tabernacle this time, as it usually was with all the other offerings, day by day, individuals, and so on. This time, on this day, the blood was to be then taken and taken right inside the veil to that mercy seat and sprinkled on that. Now, we talked about this as the most holy place. And it might seem a little bit strange that in verse 16 it says, "He shall make atonement for the holy place." That this too needed to be cleansed. That this too needed to be made right with God. But it's because it was there in the midst of the people, in the midst of their uncleanness, as you read at the end of that verse. That even the most holy place there, first within the great tabernacle, which was rather restricted entry in itself, then the tent in the middle of that courtyard, very restricted entry, only the priests could go in for holy purposes, and the most holy place inside that with the mercy seat. These things too had to be cleansed because they were there in the midst of a sinful people. That's why the blood was also to be sprinkled on the mercy seat. And with it was to go the incense. I think I mentioned when we talked about the altar of incense in the tabernacle that this is regarded in Scripture really as